And we are good to go. Welcome back to North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns. And after a week off last Monday night, we are back. And, Coach, how are you?
I'm doing, Rick. Just trying to stay healthy, waiting to call for make an appointment to get a COVID vaccine shot so I can get on that process.
Well, I hate to tell you, Coach, but I'm a whole lot older than you are, so I'm ahead of you in line. So.
Well, Rick, we went through this already, and much to your dismay, you found out that despite your advanced age,
qualify
you in line because of my numerous medical conditions.
All right. Well, we won't go into detail, but I will tell you.
But I have numerous medical conditions.
Yeah. I guess there's good and bad with that, right? It's so weird. Like, you don't want this stuff, but hell, you want to get the vaccine as soon as possible, and it's happening. And I did have a very good ski day a week ago. We had some medical problems, and it turned out I was able to go skiing on Monday with my daughter. And we've had a couple of good ski days in, and at my advanced age, I get to ski free at Gunstock. So, it was really pretty cool. Coach, I want to start. We've got a lot lined up tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun talking tonight. We've got we're going to talk to our usual compadres, Gary Larrabee, mostly on golf, but other stuff as well. We'll also be talking with Mike Grenier, primarily about the Celtics. Max Cirullo from the Newburyport Daily News will be checking in. We'll talk about sports upcountry. And in a few minutes, we're going to talk with Winthrop High School girls hockey coach Anthony Martucci. And I'm embarrassed to say I haven't talked with Coach Martucci yet up until this point. And that's a little silly. Been kind of neglectful on my part. So we're going to do that. But Tim, I really have to ask you about Tom Brady. I kind of haven't paid any attention all season. I focused on the Patriots, and, you know, they had a rough season. And I watched the playoff games so far, and I don't want to say that he has been his spectacular self, but he's been damn good.
Well, you know, the amazing thing is, you know, a lot of people have noted it today. You know, Brady going to his 10th and, you know, setting more records for his year in the NFC. Saw a great photo on Twitter. Tom all cooled out with a leather jacket over his shoulder, and the quote is, when I don't go to the Super Bowl in the AFC, I go to the Super Bowl in the NFC.
Well,
and I'm like, that was a good idea.
There you go.
But it was true. You know, they finished 11-5, which is a good record, not the best record, a lot of people would, but it says, well, sometimes they have to mesh with the system and the players to get used to him and his expectations. And you can see that really begin to grow over the second half of the season. And, I wasn't gaga following him. We talked about this. I was very grateful for the 20 years he gave us and the 9 Super Bowls, appearances, the 6 championships, you know, because nobody else has those. And, but he opted to go to another team. So, for me, he was another player. But it is amazing. And, you know, he didn't have a great game yesterday. Actually, Rodgers threw for more yardage, had a higher, and everybody loves to look at this, a higher quarterback rating. You know, Brady only had a high quarterback rating of 73. But what he did do is he made the plays when he had to. I couldn't believe the last two picks he had, they were carbon copies of each other.
They were horrible. They were horrible. Yeah.
He just threw it up in the air,
yep,
the right side, and his receivers didn't even know the ball was coming. And I'm like, wow, you know,
I think, though, Tim.
And everybody plays it up. Well, they were as good as punts.
No. What I look at, it seems to me, on both of those, and he's done a number of those this year, I get a feeling he thinks his arm is stronger than it is, because in the past when he was falling down, he'd throw it up into the stands, and I think that's what he's trying to do. It just didn't get there both times.
I don't know if I can agree with that. And I thought he was, you know, he had a receiver in the area. It looked to me, it looked like he was going for the guy. So whether he was going, you know, for the sideline or going for that receiver that was actually there, he's got to be better than that. He has to be better than that. But he did make an awful lot of plays when Tampa Bay needed plays to be made. They were confident in his leadership. You know, you could see it out there. Rodgers made some bad plays. The coach made a really stupid play, in the game for Green Bay, which helped Tampa Bay. But Tom did what he had to do to win that game, to put them in position to go to the Super Bowl.
That's what he's always done.
That's what he always managed to do.
That's what he's always done.
He didn't have to be great. He had to be good. And he was consistently good yesterday.
Well, he had to do his job.
And the defense stood up and didn't give Green Bay any opportunity to take advantage of those turnovers. They took advantage of the Green Bay turnovers, and that's what you do to move on in the playoffs. You've got to take advantage of the other guy's mistakes. You've got to be good. And he was good yesterday, and he made clutch throws. I mean, he threw some bullets yesterday, and laid the ball out there.
We've seen that. We've seen that over the years. The complaint with Brady, and I'm stunned by the strength of his arm. The complaint with Brady was that he can't throw long. He's never thrown better long. He's right on the money with these things.
Yeah, it was funny. Just before he threw that touchdown pass to Miller, who was it? Who was the color commentator? It wasn't Romo. It was
Aikman.
Aikman says, you know, Miller is just the kind of receiver that Brady's been throwing to all these years in New England. Like, you know, average guy, not a lot of hype, no name guy. And like two plays later, Brady hits the touchdown.
Yep.
I'm thinking, okay, that's exactly what Brady used to do.
That's right.
No name receivers, but big touchdown.
Yeah, it's not smart to bet against Tom Brady, I think, but Patrick Mahomes is really something, and KC is really strong.
That was scary yesterday.
He is something.
The things that he was doing, and I said to the wife, I said one of the reasons he can make all these throws and throw on the run is he used to be a shortstop. I mean, he was a draft choice for the Major League Baseball, and he was just outstanding. His father was a professional ball player, and you can see the shortstop in him when he on the run suddenly stops, plants the foot, and throws side up.
Or he throws off balance. He doesn't have to plant the foot. He can throw off balance too.
Those are shortstop throws.
Absolutely.
Guys going deep in the hole, planting the foot, throwing across your body, throwing accurately. It's all about release point. It's flipping the wrist. Even on those tosses that he does into the line, I said to me, what that is? That's the shortstop toss to the second baseman on a double play at second base. That's all he's doing. He's setting his feet. He's planting his body so he's stable, and he's making the toss so it goes directly where he wants it to go. So there's so much as a baseball player.
Well, except
in his repertoire.
Right. Except you also have to convert that to being able to throw a football, which is beyond what most people can do.
Have some of that, but not to the extent that Mahomes has.
Tim, we've got Anthony Martucci coming up in a minute here, but I do want your comments on, to me, one of the greatest baseball players of all time, and I did get to watch him when I was a kid, is the passing of Hank Aaron. Hank Aaron was, in my opinion, one of the great role models of not just Major League Baseball, but of all sports of all time.
We keep losing these legendary players over the past few months, and certainly the sporting world's loss of Hank Aaron, who, again, much like Jackie Robinson, had to bear the brunt of white America racism when he first came in. And to rise above it, as he did, and play at the level that he continuously played at over the years for the same team, was just amazing. And, I remember reading an article years ago. People, his ability to hit home runs, you'd think he was more the size of Mark McGwire or Barry Bonds or Sammy Sosa. He was a very small man, but he had tremendously strong forearms, and they said his wrists were so strong that he could hit the ball out of the ballpark simply with the flick of his wrist. And it was just amazing the prodigious ability that he had to drive the ball.
And
I'm sure you probably saw this too, but watching that game in April when he broke Babe Ruth's record and all the death threats that he was receiving in the days and weeks prior to setting that record. I remember sitting down watching because every game was televised. So not only did he have the pressure of all that, but he had the pressure of the sporting world watching every single game, every single at bat, every single pitch that he was taking. And I remember, I think he grounded out the first time. And then the second time, his second at bat in the fourth inning, he drove that pitch off of Al Downing into the left field bullpen. And I'm trying to think of his name now. He ended up being a pitching guru. He still is. Caught the ball in the air as it came over the fence.
Yeah, and that guy, he also worked with quarterbacks, didn't he? Also worked with Brady. I know who you're thinking of.
Yes, he does. It's all the kids.
I can't think of him. Thing is, too, Tim, Hank Aaron, not only did all of that, but he was more than a home run hitter. He was a five tool athlete. He was amazing.
Both players back then, a lot of them were five tool. They could hit for some power. They could. And those guys could bunt. Henry Aaron. I'd like to see how many times he actually bunted, because Kyle Jensen, we know, bunted once. That's why he hated the bunt. Aaron will probably have dropped down bunt just to put his team in a better position to win a game.
Hey, I think we can beat that. I bet Ted Williams never bunted.
Yeah. Probably.
All right.
But, if they played the shift like they play it today, I think he would have.
Oh, I know. I know. But a legend, and again, a role model. I have just such great respect, and I love watching Hank Aaron play, and I watch love watching Willie Mays play and Mickey Mantle and those guys. But, we used to have a guy similar to that I think is on a similar track, and Mookie Betts, but he doesn't play for the Red Sox anymore. So that's a story for another day. Let's hold off here, Tim. Let's pause. I'm going to bring on the Winthrop High School girls hockey coach. We're going to talk a lot of high school sports here in the next half hour or so. I want to remind everyone, this is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Bill Newell always helping out. We'll take our first break of the evening, and then when we come back, it'll be the Winthrop High School girls hockey coach.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, my pleasure right now to bring on the Winthrop High School girls hockey coach, Anthony Martucci. Maybe a familiar name for those of us who worked at WESX and you listen to the old hockey broadcast. Coach, how are you?
I'm great, thank you.
Listen, you guys, I want to get to where the team is right now because you're off to a really good start. Looking at the schedule here, you've done well, starting off with a nice win. We'll get to that in a minute. But first I want to tell you, I want to ask you a little bit about how it's gone this year. You guys, at the Larson has been open for practice, is that correct?
Yes, it has.
So tell me a little bit about how that's gone in terms of preseason and kind of getting your team together, because this is totally different from anything you've done before.
Yeah, in years past, we've been very fortunate that we have our own locker room and kind of our own space, and it was so easy to get the girls to come together because they were pretty much together all the time. They were able to get down to the rink early, get into the locker room, you know, do all their stuff prior to practices. And now, with this whole situation, we're not able to get into the rink for about 20 minutes before practice, and they're dressing in an area of the rink. There's no locker room. And, you know, we have assigned COVID coach who comes down and checks the girls in, takes their temperatures, asks them protocol questions, and then they're pretty much shuffled into the rink, get your gear on, get on the ice, and get off the ice, get your gear off, and get out. So it's been kind of a tough time, you know, doing that. But, you know, these girls, they've all pretty much grown up together. We're very fortunate. It was a small town. So it's, you know, they're still together and everything. It's not exactly the same.
Yeah, Coach Dunbar was saying that it's hard to talk to the kids, and I think Coach Gary, too, on the boys' side of Gloucester and Winthrop. Coach Dunbar was saying that, you know, sometimes you talk to the kids in the locker room, you can communicate with them about making adjustments or whatever it might be, and that's kind of gone. But practice, how does practice go when you're trying to teach the kids not only the fundamentals of hockey, but also now the COVID protocol?
It's tough because, you know, you're trying to obviously relay a message through a mask and the ice is a big surface, so it's hard for the kids to hear. And we're using those new whistles, which are, you know, the ones that you use with your finger. It's that automatic whistle. So it's a little bit different than, you know, blowing a whistle, which you can kind of do. We can't do that anymore. So, you know, pretty much it's a similar practice in most ways, but like I said, it's difficult to kind of get the word out there and stuff, and the kids are always saying, I'm sorry, couldn't hear you, I'm sorry, couldn't hear you. So it's one of those situations, you know.
Yeah, I have that problem. I can't hear as well with a mask on for some reason. I don't quite understand that.
Yeah. It affects everything. You know?
I know. I have a problem seeing, but that's another story. Okay, let's talk about your team. You guys are ranked pretty high in Eastern Mass Girls Division I. You're off to a really good start opening up. I think you beat Gloucester, what was it, 5-1 or something like that.
Yep.
And so tell me a little bit about how this season has gone, first three games.
The season's gone well to start. I think that, we finally are at a point where a lot of the players are more veterans than brand new. We only lost two seniors last year, and we only have two seniors this year. So we're not that we're super young, but we're young in the right places, but we're also old and experienced in those same places. So far it's been really good as far as the communication and the chemistry of the team. A lot of these kids have grown up playing together since, you know, U8 and up. So it's really, it's been a good start for us because I think a lot of the kids are kids that have played together for quite a while.
You know, I'm looking at your schedule up to this point, and a big win over Peabody, Linfield, North Reading combo there, you know, because they were 4-0, I think. So tell me about that game.
Well, that is a very, very good hockey team. They have been for the last few years. They've been really good. They're well coached. They got pretty much all the components you would need to be a good hockey team. They got good size. They got good speed. They're strong in goal. They're strong. Their defensemen are very strong. And the structure that they play is very good as well. So for us to go into Peabody and to come out of there with a win was really big because the last few years we've gone there and we've lost. So that was a big win for us. It was something that we, you know, was definitely marked on the calendar. They're the big dogs of the league. They've won it the last 2 years. So, you know, we really wanted to get that win, but, more or less it was just a matter of, you know, two good teams and we got a couple of good bounces. And I think that's kind of the way that went.
Wow. Now you got, you didn't get to play on Saturday, I guess. Beverly, must be a COVID related thing.
Yes, Beverly had a player that tested positive for COVID, and they had to shut down for the week. It's stunk because it come at a tough time for us. But you know, it is what it is. That's the season. You know, that's what we're dealing with now.
You know, I think the two toughest rinks for high schools to play in are on opposite ends of the North Shore. It's the Larson and the Talbot. And you know, we used to consider I taught at Gloucester High School for almost 40 years, and we used to consider the trip to Winthrop, the road trip from hell, because it just took so long to get there, you know, when you're trying to get there through rush hour traffic. But, a very comfortable rink for you guys, and you have the good fortune to be able to play there this year, so you kind of do have a home advantage.
Yeah, the Larson rink, it's kind of, you know, it's reminiscent of the old, Boston Garden, where it's so small and confined. You know, as opposed to the Talbot, which is a big rink, and you know, got all the nice stands and everything. And I've always enjoyed playing up in Gloucester. I didn't like the ride, but I did like playing.
Yeah.
And not that we came out of there with wins often, because we, you know, I played at a time when you guys had you know, Jeremy Jewell and Daryl Seppler and some really good teams. But it was always a good trip for us as far as, you know, getting to the rink. But being on that road trip, like you said, was tough.
Well, you know, and the Larson, it's the same way for Gloucester going down there or the other teams.
Sure.
And it's, and we love playing. The Larson reminds me a little bit of the old Lynn Arena, and I don't know that you're old enough to have remembered those games, but it's a very, very personal little space there. Coach, tell me about some of your leaders now. You guys got a big game coming up this week, but tell me about your young team.
Well, right now we have two junior captains. One of them is our goaltender, who we rely heavily on. She's been our goaltender for the last 3 years, and has really, you know, kind of morphed into, you know, not just a great goalie, but a team leader. Summer Talent is somebody that we rely heavily on, and she's been great for us, you know, the last 3 years. But right now, this year, she's been extremely good for us, you know, to open the season. And then the other leader that we have is another junior, and she. And that's Mia Martucci. She's a forward, but believe it or not, she was a basketball player up until the eighth grade, and she had to make a decision whether she was going to play hockey or play basketball, and she decided on hockey, and I'm so thankful. And she's been great for us, just a good leader at practice, somebody that is a real team first kid. She's a pass the puck first type kid. She's the one that kind of the straw that stirs the drink, I like to call it, mm-hmm. You know, and she gets the team going that way.
So, you know, well, Winthrop, I sort of think Winthrop and Gloucester is kind of like sister cities, because they're both blue-collar communities with kids in sports who are always tough on both sides, whether it's male or female.
Sure.
And do you have enough kids that you don't have to have a co-op? These are all Winthrop kids?
We do, and right now we only have one Lynn player remaining from the co-op.
Okay.
And she's in the eighth grade, and she played with us last year, so... We really, you know, the co-op is pretty much, you know, done away with. We used to, you know, have a sheet of ice in Lynn each week, and that's gone now. And this particular player, you know, it has played, you know, again for us in the youth hockey system all the way up. And we're hoping that we get to at least continue to keep her through her high school career, and then that'll be the very, very end of that co-op.
Yeah, and I always find the co-op thing is kind of cool, because kids have this this vision of what kids from another school are like until you get on the ice and are on the same team with them, and it changes. Kind of gives you more of a global view, I think.
Well, I've always loved that dynamic. I know that a lot of people for a while were kind of against the whole co-op thing, but obviously if you need it, you know, it's definitely something that, you know, is really good to have. And I think that's one of the things that the MAA did really well was to, you know, allow that to happen, because... You know, you want everybody to have programs, and whatever way that you have to do it, you like to see the kids playing. And as far as I'm concerned, that dynamic for me, when I first took over, we had we had Saugus and Lynn with us because we were short on numbers. Mm-hmm. And that was when it was really special because now you got kids from three different towns and you just kind of see how the other half live. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, I agree. Totally. You got, all right, tell me a little bit about the league. I mean, you already mentioned Peabody. They're a huge challenge. What's the rest of the league look like?
Well, you got a bunch of good teams. This league has really gotten, really good over my time there. When we first came in, it was kind of a, you know, it was a west part of it, and we had a bunch of different teams, and we lost some, gained some, and what it's become now is become really a good, you know, six or seven programs that have really, gotten so good. So we've got, Peabody, you got Masconomet, who is fantastic. I know that, they took a little bit of a hit because they lost their co-op this year, but they're still a fantastic team. They're well coached and they're just tough. And then you got Medford, who is always, they grind, they're tough, good team, well coached again. We also now adding Gloucester was another, you know, another nice ad for our league because we know, like you said, what kind of kids come out of there, and that's going to be, you know, another tough place for us to go from now on, which is awesome. We also have Marblehead, who's always tough, and they're combined with Swampscott mm-hmm. and North Reading, not North Reading, Swampscott and Manchester, and they're very good, and they just got a new coach, and I actually coached against her when she was coming up, so they're having a good season to start out. So we got a lot of good teams in there. I'm missing a couple. I think Newburyport, I don't know if they're in our league officially or not, but I know that they were thinking about coming in, but with the whole COVID thing, they had to come in because they needed to get those games. So I they may be independent next year, but they're in there now, and they're good.
All right, and you do have Beverly on the schedule again later on.
Those guys are another team that's a tough team all the time, and they got some really good players. They got a great goalie, they got a great forward that I know of, and a really really good defenseman that I'm aware of from a year ago. I remember watching those guys last year, and I was very surprised at how good they were. So I know that they're going to be another good stiff challenge for us, and another well coached team. So it's a battle every. It's a buzzsaw. The whole schedule is a buzzsaw.
As I got a couple more questions. Coach, I just thought of watching girls hockey over the years, and is it my eyes or have the kids gotten much more aggressive and more powerful on their skates?
I think that what you're seeing now is you're seeing more of the athletes preparing themselves in the off season, whether it's playing more hockey, which there are more opportunities to play with more teams to play on. But I also think that a lot of these athletes are now, you know, getting more involved in the training part of, you know, of sports, especially on the girls' side. I know that the boys, it's something that the boys do all the time, but the girls, I think, are now starting to realize that if they want to be, you know, at a certain level, they have to train in the off season, and you're starting to see more kids are training, and that's what I think it is. I think there's just more hockey and more training mm-hmm. going on, and you've seen the big improvement.
What's the scouting report on Masco, and how far of a road trip is that up to Haverhill?
That's a tough one too. The funny part about it is the one thing that COVID has done for us is make the traffic much better.
Because
it was the best ride I ever had to Gloucester, you know, a few weeks ago. It was the best ride to Gloucester ever. So, you know, but Havel's another tough road trip for us, and it's a tough building. You know, it's a tough place to play in, and Masco always makes it tough. And, you know, we're as much as we're looking forward to it, it's not one we look forward to because we know it's going to be a war, you know.
All right, that is Winthrop High School girls hockey coach Anthony Martucci with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore. And we are back live. Thank you, Coach Martucci. Talking now with Gary Larrabee, a golf writer, sports historian, and all-around good guy. Gary, how you doing?
Doing wonderful, guys. We're getting another day closer to February, so that's progress, let me tell you.
Well, it is, and, you know, they've got the Masters ads out there already before the Super Bowl, so you got to feel like things are progressing. We're on our way.
Think about it. The Masters will be here again in early April, and we'll be ready for another golf season, thankfully, I hope.
Amen to that. All right. So what? Where do we want to go, Gary? I mean, there is golf somewhere, I suppose, at this time of year?
Well, we could talk some local golf, I think, to start with a couple of very special people in our golf community. One would be Kip Tyler, who's the recently retired golf course superintendent at Salem Country Club. Last year was his first year not being the superintendent after 38 years on the job, and his peers at the Golf Course Superintendents Association of New England has not forgotten Kip. He was just named the recipient of their Distinguished Service Award for 2021, which is a very, very special honor. And it's a wonderful way to probably close out Kip's career after a fantastic nearly four decades at Salem Country Club. And, of course, he was the superintendent there for three major USGA championships. And his, it's a great way for him to finish up his career, and a very good choice. He's only the second recipient, though, with North Shore Connections, Dean Robertson, the longtime former superintendent at Kernwood. He received the award about 10 years ago, and he's obviously now in very good company with Kip Tyler.
What is this? What's the role, Gary? Forgive my ignorance, but what is a superintendent of a golf course?
He basically is in charge of the property of all the grass. He's supposed to make sure the grass grows and make sure the flowers bloom. But most important, that those greens are beautifully for putting,
mm-hmm.
and the fairways have that ball sitting up nice and high for your fairway shots. It's all about keeping the course in the best condition possible, and they all have, you know, staffs of maybe 5, 10, 15 assistants. But Kip's had an extraordinary career after coming here from a Medina number 3 out in Illinois. He was an Ohio State alumnus, and he's from Ohio, and it's a wonderful way to end his career with this wonderful award.
Amen to that. Any award is good. Kearns, you still there?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I thought you'd be barking about stuff right now on this stuff. Apparently, Gary's got some information about Rob Oppenheim as well.
Yes, Rob did make the cut this week after missing the cut last week in Hawaii. He made the cut this week at the PGA Tour event, the American Express Classic out in the West Coast, and he had a couple of scores in the 60s. A 67 on Saturday put him in great position to finish in the top 20. But he slipped to a 74 in the final round and dropped quite a few spots. But still, good to be reporting that Rob Oppenheim from Salem and Andover is back out there trying to make a go over with the big boys. And he had a pretty fair week. He made, I think, almost close to $20,000. And he's back out there, Tim, trying to make a go of it at the age of 41.
Yeah, It seems like the final day is his Achilles heel, Gary. He has good opening rounds, and then on the final day, there are just struggles that catch him.
You're exactly right. And this has been his bugaboo for several years out there, but he's still grinding away. He's like 141st on the FedEx Cup standings. You know, the top 100 players make it to the FedEx Cup playoffs come end of the season, and he's within reach of those, of that top 100 spot.
You know, it's just a matter of having several good finishes and getting those points that shoot you up that ranking rather quickly.
Yeah, well, he's going to get his act together, and we've been saying that for a long time, but he's still out there cranking away, and I know they're going to be changing the they do a mix-up every 3 or 4 months out there based on your performance of the previous 3 or 4 months, and I'm not sure when that first shake-up, they call it, occurs, but we need to get Rob out there to do some big things. And, you know, we had one Massachusetts winner on the PGA Tour last year. Richie Wawenski from Holyoke won the Barracuda Open, which was a PGA Tour event. He has an exemption now through 2022, but he's in the young breed type. He's only like 27, 28, and would love to see a second Massachusetts player win a tour event like Rob Oppenheim, but he'll give it another shot this week out there on the West Coast.
Gary, are you working on any long-term projects?
Yes, we're working, continuing to work on putting together a book for the Centennial Year, which is this year at Charles River Country Club in Newton. Charles River is the club, I think, the only club in America that can claim have claims to fame to both Francis Ouimet and Donald Ross as members.
Hmm.
And it's got a wonderful history, and we're working on that, and love to keep it going, and almost finishing it up, but still got a ways to go. Love doing these projects. This would be my 15th book, and maybe my last, maybe not my last. We'll see how that goes.
Hey, you and Tom Brady, man, keep it going, keep it going. Tim, any final thoughts for Gary?
What happened to your boy Rory? Did Rory win today? I was watching the highlights, and he was behind. He was challenging, then he fell off. Then all of a sudden, he jumped to the lead out at Abu Dhabi.
Rory did not win. Rory did not win. The name of the winner escapes me, but he's been out there for a while. A younger player, but no, Rory did not win. But we should be happy that Se-Woo Kim won the American Express Classic, and we should be happy that one of the two Korda sisters, Jessica Korda, won the women's LPGA event out of Florida. A couple of nice young names. Of course, we talk about the Asian women, but in this case, we still have some very strong players from Asia on the men's circuit. And Se-Woo Kim, this is his third PGA Tour victory, Tim. It looks like he's going to be around for a long time. He's a young guy with a fabulous swing.
Yeah, it's amazing. We talked about all the Asian women that tear up the LPGA throughout the last several years, but there've been some really strong Asian men that have performed very, very well and very consistently over that same time period. But they don't seem to get as much ink as one thinks they might.
No, but they have beautifully smooth, wonderfully tempoed swings, like most of the Asian women out on the LPGA Tour. But this was a weekend for Jessica Korda, you know, whose father used to be a pretty good professional tennis player, because Jessica's sister Nellie's also won out on the LPGA Tour. So it's always a great story when one of them wins. If they grew up in Connecticut, they're Americans. And we'll see what happens this week, guys. Another week of action on the tours, and we'll see how it shakes down before we start getting countdown to the Masters and getting countdown to hopefully a 2021 golf season for all of our locals here.
Gary, sounds great. If everything goes well, we'll do it again next Monday night.
Look forward to it.
Thank you so much, Gary. Stay safe.
Take care, man. Stay well.
Take care.
Gary.
That's Gary Larrabee, a sports historian and a golf writer here on actually, he writes a lot of stuff for the Salem Evening News. I keep calling it the Salem Evening. Do you get stuck like that, Tim, sometimes with names and things like that?
I still call it the Daily Evening Item.
Yeah, I know.
And that's because that's what I grew up with.
And the Record American? Yeah.
Right.
I know.
When I was a young kid and I was working for Mike Waldron, lived next door, who has the daily paper room. We used to carry it in our big canvas bag. I used to carry the Globe, the Herald, the Traveler, the American.
Yep.
The Glenn Item.
Yep.
Unbelievable. I mean,
and most of them.
Boston papers that eventually merged.
And most of them had two editions a day. They had a morning and an evening.
The Globe had four stars. Had four editions.
Yep. All right, we'll take a break, come back with Max Cerullo of the Newburyport Daily News. Hey, I got that one right. All right, so we will be back. I just have to find the right button to push here. I think it's this one, and stay with us. This is North Shore Sports Night.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
All right. I fell asleep at the switch there for 1 second. We had a little bit of dead air. I'm going to bring Tim Kearns back in here. And now we're talking with Max Cirullo, who is the sports editor at the Newburyport Daily News. Mac, how are you?
Hey there. How's it going?
Hi, Mac.
We're okay, I think, and a lot to talk about going on in high school sports in the Cape Ann League. And, you know, in the Northeastern Conference, Gloucester just racked up a 100-point score with Jack Costanzo his junior season. And you're reporting on a Pawtucket hockey player who hit the 100 mark.
Well, actually, he reached the 100 mark last year when he just reached with the program scoring record. He just surpassed Billy Bamba, who played back in like 2001 to 2004, who had 120 points when he graduated. And Richie's up to, I believe, 122 now. So he's the top guy in that program's history. Those two are the only guys in Pawtucket who have ever made 100 points, and you know, much less like 120. So he's a pretty good player. He's had a great career, and it's pretty exciting for him to have that mark all for himself.
Yeah, we're talking about Richie Hardy, of course, of Pawtucket. I just talked with Dan Thornton a few days ago when Pawtucket was 3-0. But now tell me a little bit about how the standings are looking up there, because it looks like Newburyport and Triton are sort of battling for first place.
Yeah, 100%. So both teams are 4-0-1 overall. Their tie came against each other. They played a fantastic game last week. Triton takes a pretty impressive lead. Newburyport comes back, actually takes the lead, and then Triton ties it up late on a shorthanded goal, believe it or not. They're fantastic. Both of them are very good teams. And, I haven't had a chance to see, most of the other teams in the league yet, but I think it's pretty safe to say those two teams are going to be battling it out. Unfortunately, actually, I just found this out within the last couple of minutes. Triton is on a brief pause because of a close contact, so they're off until the third, whatever day that is next week.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
A little bit of a setback there, but either way, they they're going to be in every game they play, so they're really good.
Well, we've become inured to that, I think, and I think it's okay. People are. We're not as shocked or we're not as disappointed because everybody obviously wants to do the right thing safely-wise. And the schools have rebounded pretty nicely. They're still getting the games in. So if these – they may be postponements, they may be cancellations, but they are doing it. Mac, maybe you could take us around the other sports in the area about what's catching your eye, maybe at the top of the list.
Yeah, so I'll tell you this. So if we want to go to basketball, because Newburyport and Triton Hockey are, for the boys, are kind of the big stories there. For basketball, the Newburyport boys team is, as expected, dominant. They are still undefeated, I believe 6-0 now. Jacob Robertson was expected to be the best returning player in the league, and he's been that and more. He's averaging like 18.5 points, maybe 19 a game now, just been absolutely on fire. Georgetown had been off to a great start, but actually they had to shut down for the season because, frankly, the Georgetown High School itself was having just the problem was getting to be a little bit too big, so they just needed to shut everything down, which was a huge bummer because that team was awesome, and it would have been really fun to see them play Newburyport at some point down the road. They never got matched up, unfortunately. Newburyport is definitely looking like kind of one of the better teams there. For the girls, Newburyport and Pawtucket are both undefeated, and they were supposed to actually play tomorrow, but they postponed that till next week. We'll get to that at some point eventually.
Yep.
In general, a lot of the local teams have been playing very well. Those are sort of, I would say, the four big ones. And then I guess the other big story, Newburyport High School has a girls hockey team now. The local schools all broke off from the Masconomic Co-op, and they basically just decided to form their very own Newburyport High team. And it's the very first time that local girls can play for a public high school, like in their own neck of the woods, without having to like drive to Masconomic,
right?
You know, wherever they were practicing.
Nice.
So that's cool. The team's doing pretty solid so far. They're 2-1. You know, I think that program is going to be building its way up for a little bit. You know, at some point in the near future, but. Definitely a really cool story, even though it's obviously this winter has been weird.
You not, think? Really?
A lot of bad, but then there's some good, and that's one of the good.
I got a couple more quick questions. Tim, you got anything for Mac before I ask him?
Oh, I was just going through their website, and I noticed that it was a few days old, as you mentioned, but that Georgetown cancellation. Do you see this expanding throughout the area where teams are going to have to, or schools are going to have to shut down sports? Because we've seen it at the collegiate level, and it seems to be happening more and more. Teams are just canceling their seasons.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to necessarily be a trend, like, locally. So what happened with Georgetown, you know, all these schools are basing their decisions off of what is happening in their schools and on their rosters, and, you know, everybody's situation is different. But just because Georgetown says we have to shut things down, that's not going to just say, everybody else isn't just going to look at that and say, oh, well, we have to shut down too. Because the reality is Georgetown's outbreak was very significant. So it's just a different, you know, everybody's in a different boat. The colleges, it's like night and day. Like, you know, colleges, you're traveling often across state lines. You know, you're on a college campus and a high school campus are totally different ball games where, you know, you can kind of reasonably kind of control a high school environment, but a college environment, it's just, you know, it's not the same. And, you know, the colleges have to be, you know, certainly very careful too. So that's I wouldn't be concerned about that, but obviously just generally the numbers being as high as they are is a cause for concern. So there's no way we can really know how it's going to go. But so far they've managed to, you know, I wouldn't say that we managed to make it through it pretty good, but at least like games continue to be played. So that's ultimately a good thing for the kids.
Yeah, I think we have. We got to take what we have, and it's been okay so far. My final question, Mac, is how do you assess Masconomet now? Masco moving down to the NEC, and they seem to be fitting in seamlessly there. And what's that mean to the schools in the CAL now?
Well, for Masco, it's a great move. I mean, if we're being honest, they were kind of a fish out of water in the KPM League by the end because just like their enrollment wise, they're like twice as big as the most of the rest of the KPM League schools. And, you know, just, you know, geographically, it was obviously a perfect fit, but, like, it kind of is in the Northeastern Conference, too. So, you know, now they have the opportunity to compete against larger schools. And, you know, as far as, like, state tournament kind of stuff goes, you know, they usually play in a higher division than most of the KPM League schools do for, like, tournament purposes. So it'll help in that respect because now they will have, you know, a better preparation for the state tournaments when that, you know, once that becomes a thing again.
Right.
Now, as far as the rest of the KPM League goes, Masconomet leaving is opening a tremendous opportunity in a lot of sports. You know, in some sports, you have, like, Pentucket girls basketball, for instance, has dominated the league anyways. But in other sports, like in soccer, boys soccer, for instance, Masconomet's won, like, I don't remember the exact number, but it's something like 36 KPM League titles since, like, the mid-70s.
Yikes.
This is absolutely, like, a stupid amount. Mm-hmm. You know, and then on the upshot of that is you have Newburyport this year was the very first time they won even a share of the KPM League title in over 50 years. You know, Triton has won maybe once. Mm-hmm. You know, in Pentucket, you know, Christian Langlois has been the coach of Pentucket for 20 years. He has over 200 career wins. He's never won a league title. Like, you know, Masconomet was just they were just like a 300-pound gorilla. And with them being gone now, you have some of those really, really good, solid programs that had always been competitive. Now it kind of opens the door for some of them to really kind of make their own mark.
So apparently what you're saying is it's made a difference.
Oh, huge difference. Okay. A good difference.
All right.
I think it'll work out. It's a good move for everybody.
Yeah, I know the NEC.
For North Andover when they went to the NBC. Like,
right.
They have been doing just fine over there. It's a perfect fit. Masco is a perfect fit. And now the KPN League as a whole is a more cohesive conference, and I think it's going to work out well for everybody involved.
Great information, great analysis. Thank you so much, Mac. We'll check in with you probably before football starts.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's coming up.
That's going to be weird. Yeah.
I know.
That sounds great. We'll talk to you then.
All right, Mac. Stay safe. Thank you so much.
No problem.
Talk to you later. Very good. Okay, that's Max Cirillo, who is the sports editor of the Newburyport Daily News. And, man, did he catch fire up there at the Daily News. Does a great job, covers pro sports. I think he covers the Patriots as well. All right, we'll take a break here, very quick break. Come back with Mike Renier, sports writer and a longtime friend, and going to talk probably some Celtics, I'm guessing. So just hang in there. We'll be back if I can find the right thing. Here it is. We'll be right back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back with Mike Renier. Mike, welcome back to MSO.
Oh, it's great to be back. Hey, listen, I have a question for you guys. You know, they have a lot of fun with Tom Brady's age these days, and they try to compare somebody younger than Tom Brady. And, you know, I've seen quizzes where they say, is Jimmy Fallon younger than Tom Brady? is Eminem, you know, younger than Tom Brady? I think they could safely say that Tim Kearns, Rick Moore, and Mike Grenier are older than Tom Brady.
That's a safe bet. Tim? Yeah, he's laughing, so yeah.
Right? Maybe even twice. Maybe the question should be, are we twice as old as Tom Brady?
I like to tell people, Mike, that I'm ahead of you in the COVID vaccination line. That's how old I am. So just to be clear, just to let you know. Yeah, but it's a thing of beauty, and I think, you know, it's fun to talk sports, and it's fun as fans to follow these guys. And Tim and I were talking about Hank Aaron earlier, and we've...
tremendous.
Yeah, and you know, and I don't know where you want to start. I just have a question before about the Celtics, I think, before...
Definitely.
Before you take it over.
Sure.
And Tim. I went through a little panic this week. They were 8-3 at one point. Now they're 8-6. But...
9-6, yeah. 9-6.
Oh, they're 9-6. All right. But they had injuries. They had COVID protocol. Basically, they were walking on one leg here. So what's your assessment of the situation? I guess Tatum's supposed to be back tonight?
Correct. Tatum's supposed to be back tonight against the Chicago Bulls. I think what caused a little bit of sense of panic, Rick, with us, and you and Tim both being fans like me, is that the games are kind of crowded right now because they have these back-to-back games, in, you know, to try to avoid travel. And the Celtics played a good Philadelphia team on back-to-back nights, basically, and lost both games. And then, you know, a couple nights later, they're playing the Cleveland Cavaliers, who they blew out. So, you know, when they lost those back-to-back games to Philly, my thought was, okay, Tatum didn't play. The Celtics didn't play especially well, especially on defense. I'm concerned about the way they're playing on defense. They're giving up too many points, too many easy points, too many second-chance points. But Philly is an improved team on the Doc Rivers. It's an amazing how a good coach can make a difference. Last year's Philly team under Brett Brown, a guy who's from Portland, Maine. I got to know him pretty well over the last few years. Good guy, good coach, but nothing like Doc Rivers. Doc Rivers has his Philly team at the top of the conference standings right now. They're like 12-5. The Celtics are still thirds. So even with the little dip in production by the Celtics, they're still right there. So, you know, they played a good team in Philly, lost to them twice. Embiid went to the foul line at will, and it makes you think down the line, if they play Philadelphia in the playoffs, how do they defend Joel Embiid? Because you tend to think of him as being a little bit lazy, but Doc Rivers kicks butt. He doesn't take any baloney from his players, and I have a feeling that Embiid's going to play hard for him all year because he has no choice, and that makes Philly a tougher team. And, you know, Rick, I know you have some Philadelphia ties, and I think the Philadelphia fans got to be excited about what's happening down there. And if anything, that's going to be a very tough opponent for the Celtics. But the Celtics themselves, you know, Jaylen Brown is definitely one of the top 10 players in the NBA right now, and he's in the top 10 in scoring. He's averaging 27.3. And Tatum, who comes back tonight, is also in the top 10 scoring at 26.9. And I've liked what I've seen since Kemba Walker has come back. So there are some promising things here with the Celtics.
You know, like one of the things that I've noticed throughout the course, the early course of this season, is they still have that tendency to fall behind by a lot,
Yep.
Then go up by a lot, and then blow a lot of points. Blow another lead. It happened the other night against Cleveland. I turned it on. They were down by, 10 or 12.
Yeah, they were up by 40 at one point, and it went down to like 22. Yeah, and you know, you say they should, you know, you don't worry about a 40-point lead, but yeah, with the Celtics, not they're going to blow the 40-point lead, but it can go down to 20 because I think, Tim, you hit on something that I wanted to touch on, is that the lack of consistent bench production. That when they put in members of the second unit, the production drops off significantly, both offensively and defensively, and they're just a very shaky team in terms of depth. Their frontline guys are fine, but their depth is really, you know, questionable, you know, and they're sort of up and down. I mean, you saw last night Carson Edwards, who's had a terrible start to his career in his second year. He had 18 last night, but it was in garbage time, so you don't really know if he can do it when the pressure's on. The rookie Aaron Neff had a couple of threes last night, but he's shooting like 21 or 22% going into the game. So, it just doesn't look, and, you know, Semi Ojeleye is somewhat improved, but still not a great offensive player. Grant Williams in his second year, you like him, you love his attitude, the way he attacks the boards, but he's not a consistent scorer either. So there are some concerns when you get beyond those frontline starters, you know?
I turned the game on last night, and I'm like, which guys are the Celtics? Because I didn't recognize anybody on the floor until I picked out Williams because of his hairdo. And I'm like, who are these other four guys? I've never seen them.
At that point,
last night. Did they give them uniforms? It was like unbelievable.
Oh, yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. But I think last night, Brad Stevens had the rare luxury of going to the very end of the bench, knowing they had a game 24 hours later in Chicago tonight when the Celtics were up 35-40. He was able to sub out all the key guys and put in, you know, Waters and Carson Edwards and Taco Fall, and guys who normally don't play many minutes at all, Nesmith included, and he was able to use those guys last night and save the legs of the starters, you know, like Tristan Thompson and Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart and those guys. So that was the beauty of last night's win. Even though those guys are somewhat unrecognizable, you know, the guys at the end of the bench, they did give...
I think he went off the end of the bench, Mike.
There
were guys sitting in that first row seat. I think they got uniforms. I'd like,
I know, we chuckle about it, but it will be a concern when they play the good teams and they get to the playoffs. Can they get any consistency from their bench? I mean, the guy that, Tim, I'd like to get your take on this, and Rick, if you want to chime in too, the guy I'm disappointed with is a veteran player who should be contributing a lot more, and that's Jeff Teague. 32 years old, he's had a good career, but he's only shooting like 28-29% overall. I mean, he's shooting well from three-point land, but he's making turnovers. He's not distinguishing himself. You know, he's just not a good presence out there right now. And you worry because I felt like he would be a good guy to back up Marcus Smart or Kemba Walker. And, you know, Brad Stevens is certainly giving him the minutes, but he just hasn't looked good in a Celtics uniform.
Yeah, I think it comes down to a case of, this is the last stop. I'm going to do as much as I can, but I think he realizes what his limitations are now, and he was hoping to maybe transcend them, but I think he is what he is. Yeah. There's a reason players like him are become available.
Correct.
Because other teams recognize that, you know, you just haven't got it. You've lost the step. The shooting touch just doesn't come as quick as it used to. And, you know, you become a defensive liability. And if you can't maintain possession, you know, we're chasing people down the court a lot. So he could be a casualty sometime during the course of this season where they're just going to let him go.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Celtics are going to go as far as their so-called, I mean, I guess you can call them the mini big three, because I don't want to compare them to Parrish, Burton, and McHale. I mean, or you know, Garnett and Ray Allen and Paul Pierce. But, you know, Kemba Walker and Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are going to have to really literally carry that team on their back.
and hope to get help from Tice. You know, all these other guys have been inconsistent, right, Rick? They just have not looked consistent. They have a good game followed by a bad game, or a good quarter followed by a bad quarter. And it's concerning, because any coach or any fan wants consistency out of the team. I don't think Brad Stevens can trust that consistency to happen.
Mike, this has been a trend with the team under Stevens for the past couple of years.
Yes.
They get going, they have great spurts, and then it's like they forget they're playing basketball, and the other team comes roaring back, takes a big lead, and then they're struggling at the end of the game to try to find a way to win. And that's kind of disconcerting that he hasn't found a way to correct that, either in his own coaching or with the attitude and the effort of the guys he's coaching.
Right, exactly. We wish that every guy on the team played with the effort of a Marcus Smart. Now, Marcus Smart isn't always effective, especially as a three-point shooter, but he's going to give you that defensive effort and that toughness that other guys either are not willing to give them or are unable to give them. I wish everybody on the team had Marcus Smart's toughness, because if you can play good defense as a team throughout the season, you're going to be there at the end, because, you know, if you're playing consistent defense, you're going to be in the top 5 or 10 in the NBA, and you're going to have a chance to win games in the playoffs because your offense is going to come around to a certain degree. But with the Celtics, what's been disturbing, and I noticed that a year ago at this time, Tim, through 15 or 16 games, they were in the top 5 in several defensive categories. And then I looked it up this season, they rank like 18th, 20th, 16th, 15th in various defensive categories. So there's a big drop-off so far in the defense. But, again, we're only talking through 15 or 16 games.
You know, I wonder if that's talent or rotation, but we're getting close to time here, Mike. And one of the things I want to ask you about is the schedule, because I've watched the National Hockey League and the NBA, and of course they realigned the conferences as well.
Right.
And I'm wondering if they're gonna keep this, because I gotta tell you, as a fan, you know, it's one thing you wanna make money seeing Calgary Flames come in, for example, or somebody, the Portland Trailblazers from the West Coast. But on the other hand, these rivalries, I think, are great to watch, and back-to-back games, you know, with a day off in between, I think it's pretty cool.
Well, I think actually, you know, you're right, Rick, because I actually have heard Celtics players say this was like a mini playoff series, because they played the Indiana Pacers back-to-back, for example, a few weeks ago, and the players saying back-to-back games, you know, if you lose that first game, you come back with a hostile attitude the second game, because you don't want to lose both games of the double set, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with the Philly games that the Celtics, you know, unfortunately lost the second game, you know, after losing the first game. But that is a building rivalry. You know, Rick, we grew up with that great Celtics-Philadelphia rivalry. And of course, it even transcends, you know, those teams when we were little kids. You know, the Bill Russell era, they had a phenomenal rivalry with Chamberlain, the Philadelphia Warriors.
Yep.
And, you know, you're seeing a mini version of that right now, because they are playing them more often. And Doc Rivers being a familiar name in Boston, that's automatically going to make it a rivalry if they meet in the playoffs.
Yeah. Tim, final word.
I guess in terms of looking at the Celtics, I wish that the guys who make up the team presently would take a page out of Larry Bird's playbook. You don't have to score a lot of points every night, but you got to find another way to help the team win a game.
Defense,
get assists. You don't have to put the ball in the hoop. You can give it to somebody else and get the assist. You can stop a player coming down. Just be stronger in the other three phases of the game if you're not putting the ball in the hoop. And we know they have a lot of guys who can't do that.
So there's a lot of
guys emphasizing the other three.
Yep, I agree. I mean, they have to find more cohesiveness. And to me, they have to make much more of a defensive effort. They're not a mentally tough team. I think they have a capability of getting better at it, because Marcus Smart sort of symbolizes what the toughness can be, but they're not willing to emulate Marcus Smart's toughness, maybe because they don't want to get knocked down. I mean, Marcus Smart doesn't mind getting knocked down, because he gets back up and knocks you down.
Yep.
But guys like Tatum and Brown are great players, but I don't know if they're unwilling or, you know, they're such great players, but They don't exhibit the Marcus Smart toughness. I might be a picky. I might be being picky here. I'm not sure, but that's what I see with my own eyes.
Well, but Mike, you're not being picky. That's an observation that has been honed and gleaned out of X number of years watching the Celtics, at least 30.
Yeah.
And you've seen some tough. We have seen some tough guys over the years. Tim mentioned Bird, and Marcus Smart embodies that Celtic attitude. I love your analysis on that.
Well, I mean, even a few years, you know, when he had Marcus Morris a couple of years ago, and they got to reach the Eastern, he was a tough guy, kind of a young veteran. He would mix it up with Aaron Baines, another one. He would bounce people off his body, deck them and all that stuff. I don't mean in a dirty way. I mean, let them know he was there, and you don't mess with us. You know, they sort of have to embody the toughness, the team's toughness. You had guys like Aaron Baines and Marcus Morris, and what did the Celtics do? They couldn't.
We lost you, Mike. Tim, you still there?
Yep.
Oh, okay. We lost Mike. All right, well, I'll call him back after we wrap this thing up. Tim, final thoughts?
No, that was just a great takeoff on the Celtics. If we could have just mailed that to them and let Brad Stevens hear it.
Exactly. Exactly.
I think we solved all their problems.
That was spot on, wasn't it? That was amazing. All right, Tim, thank you so much. We'll talk next Monday night.
All right, brother. Tell the family I said hello.
All right. Very good. You as well. Say hey to medium.
All right.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right. I'll call Mike back as soon as we wrap this thing up and let him know. Thank you for joining us. This is MSO News Sports. This has been North Shore Sports Night. So on behalf of Tim Kearns and Bill Proposky, our producer and engineer, and, of course, for Bill Newell, I'm Rick Moore. Thank you so very much for joining us, and thank you very much to you guys. You know, if you're interested in letting us know about yourselves, or you want to send along a comment, do it, please, to msonewsports@gmail.com. msonewsports@gmail.com. And thanks to Coach Goodhue as well. Always appreciate it, Coach. This is msonewsports.com.